You're listening to Agency Alchemy, a podcast from Advertising Week. Join us as we sit down with top agency executives to uncover the secrets behind their success and explore how they're navigating the ever-evolving advertising landscape. From discussions around innovative strategies and emerging trends to effective leadership conversations, each episode offers invaluable insights into what it takes to thrive in today's evolving marketing world. If you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you're looking for more content like this, check out our roster of podcasts available now on the Advertising Week Podcast Network at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening. In this episode of Agency Alchemy, Chris Pierce, Managing Director at Green Park, takes us on a journey through his dynamic career in advertising. From jumping ship from banking to leading global agencies, he shares his insights on balancing creativity and data, navigating different ownership structures, and fostering a culture of optimism in agencies. Plus, we dive into the evolving role of AI in content creation, leadership strategies for transformation, and what the future holds for agencies of all sizes. Keep listening for a masterclass in leadership, innovation, and the intersection of art and science in marketing.
Chris, welcome to the show. I'm so pleased to have you on today.
Fantastic to be here. Thanks, Richard.
For the uninitiated, myself included, tell me a little bit about Green Park and what you all do there.
Absolutely. Well, we are a global, independent, performance-driven content agency. We focus absolutely around search and social. That's the what of what we do, if you like. But our why is we're absolutely passionate about creating amazing content that both people and algorithms absolutely love. So it's really the sort of art and science. So it's matching understanding of human behavior, where they're searching, why they're searching, and making sure that we can serve up absolutely relevant content at the point of need when they need it. And that's what we do. I'm the managing director here, and my region covers EMEA and the US, but we have three global hubs. The first one is based here in London. The second is Sao Paulo in Brazil, and Singapore represents our APAC region. And we have staff across US, Canada, and South Africa. So that's, in a nutshell, I guess, what we do.
The intersection of art and science is always very interesting. Tell me a bit about your career path and how did you land at Green Park? And on top of that, how do you work in both art and science?
I suppose going way back, I was all set for a career in banking. And I did a year or two in banking. Soon worked out that wasn't really for me. And to the disappointment of my parents, I ran away and joined the advertising circus, as they called it, which back then was J. Walter Thompson, one of the bigger, more famous ad agencies, just been acquired by WPP. Certainly learned about building brands, understanding human behavior. And I guess that's what got me started. I then fairly rapidly realized I was fairly entrepreneurial, jumped into an independent agency, and shortly after that, launched my own agency with some other people and had a fabulous ride. In fact, I launched two independent digital agencies, HHB and B and Blowfish. That was great for a while. I then got back into larger agencies, joined an independent, again called TMW Unlimited. And in terms of different cultures and environments, that was a fascinating journey. Started as an independent, we were sold to a PLC group, ran that for a bit. We were then approached by private equity. We were taken off the UK stock market, then ran under private equity ownership. And ultimately, that business was sold to Accenture Somm just last year. I'd moved on by then, jumped back into the networked world, joined an IPG-owned agency, MRM, part of McCann World Group, was running that in London for a few years. Probably worked out that my best environment was the independent agency sector. And I'd always been fascinated by digital, the web, customer engagement. So I joined a boutique design transformation consultancy that was actually employee-owned. So it was almost like the last type of environment that I hadn't quite experienced. that was fascinating, running and leading an agency on behalf of the employees, all of whom had an ownership stake. Very different environment to running a PLC backed agency. And then finally landed at Green Park a few short months ago. And I think it was really a combination of the culture. It's very entrepreneurial, founded by Sven Lung, who founded Brand Alley originally, a very successful e-commerce company. I love his energy, his entrepreneurial spirit. And it is coming right round full circle, that delicious blend of science, data, human understanding, psychology. And they're the two things that have always fascinated me. Why people do the things they do and how technology can help enable some of the answers to that conundrum. So that is basically how I ended up at Green Park. And I guess hopefully it begins to explain my passion for human behavior and great content that meets the needs of that human behavior.
When thinking of the challenges that all of these different cultures would present to you, when you go to different ownership structures, for example, and you're looking to drive transformation, say it's private equity or VC-backed versus public versus network or independent, what are those challenges as you see them, or as you've seen them, I guess, because you know you've pretty much been in all of them?
Well, I think first and foremost is understanding that the drivers and the agendas of whoever is in charge, it's absolutely about understanding their agendas first and foremost. Now, clearly in public companies, the classic tradition of that is it is the shareholders, and public companies exist to serve shareholders. Now, in the last few years, I think I've been fortunate enough to experience a slight shift in shareholder primacy towards more sort of stakeholder capitalism, if you will. And movements like the B Corp, I think, have really helped with that. Phrases like the triple bottom line and genuinely trying to look after people, planet, and profit. But what I would say is more recently, I think I've seen a little bit of the resurgence of, if you like, shareholder capitalism, and lots of companies perhaps refocusing around really driving profitability for the shareholders. There's nothing wrong with that at all, but I think that the balance is certainly shifting back towards that in certain companies. So I don't know whether that's a result of post-COVID, post the tech layoffs we've seen, lots of big organizations are constantly restructuring. We're in a very different world now than even three, four years ago, pre-COVID. So all of that presents lots of leadership challenges in terms of from an agency point of view. As a leader, I think first and foremost, you have to almost protect from some of that pressure in terms of motivating, say, creative people, data scientists, developers, all the wonderful folk that make up a modern digital agency. For lots of them, driving shareholder value is not going to be what gets them out of bed. So I think there's an element of understanding, again, back to like human motivation and behavior, what are the motivations of the people at the very top? And how do you motivate the people that actually deliver the results and keep both sides happy? At the same time, how do you maintain your own values, your own sense of purpose, and what gets you out of bed in the morning? And that is quite a difficult balancing act. And I think it varies in terms of the different pressures from the top, I would say. Now, there are some techniques and frameworks that have served me well. Would it be useful to perhaps go into some of those?
Oh, absolutely. I find this stuff endlessly fascinating. I feel like we live in a time where you're absolutely right. Post-COVID, it feels like business has become more business as usual, for lack of a better way of putting it, than ever. But yet consumers, and particularly young consumers, are looking for the complete opposite in many cases. And all you need to do is glance at social. They're looking for completely different values. They're looking for everything but your financial bottom line. They don't care about that. And it's fascinating to watch companies and agencies struggle with this. So yeah, I'm absolutely interested.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right on that authenticity of content. And I think that comes back to a lot of the analytics work we do at Green Park is about understanding how and why people are seeking content and making sure that the authenticity of that messaging is coming through. and is not corporate, and it is genuinely seen as authentic, credible, authoritative answers to what they're looking for. But from a leadership perspective, there's a few people who have been quite influential on my career, I guess. There's a leadership coach called Steve Radcliffe. He's written a great book called Leadership Plain and Simple. And he has a few simple frameworks that have stuck with me. And I think his philosophy, which I've adopted, is any leader really needs to do sort of three things. First and foremost, it's really important to paint a picture of the future, to set the vision. Where are we heading? Do we have a plan? I mean, so many agencies I've been in, even through some really tough times, if you've got a clear idea and you can communicate coherently, this is where we're heading, we have a plan, this is what we're aiming for, it absolutely helps to calm people down. We've got a plan, we know where we're heading. Now that, of course, can be quite challenging if that vision is not entirely in your hands. So if you're in a big network group, for example, quite often that vision might be set from the center, wherever that center may be. That's a slightly different job. I think that is about getting on board and understanding that and helping to communicate that. So vision is the first thing. The second thing, often overlooked in a certain style of leadership, is about engaging your leadership team and ultimately the entire agency in that vision and what you're up to. Because if you can't co-create or get a sense of co-creation, it's really, really difficult. And you end up with this dreadful sort of top-down, you know, the deck arrives from some foreign country. This is where we're heading. This is the vision. And it's the classic top-down, not invented here, really difficult to get engagement, really difficult to get traction. People don't fully understand it. So engaging that effectively leadership team, again, is a real art, probably more of an art than a science. And that is about all those emotion intelligence skills, empathy, understanding different people's motivations within your leadership team. And the third aspect, very, very important in some of those tougher environments, is you've got to be able to deliver the results. So it's all very well setting a vision and having a happy team and everyone's super engaged. But if it's not delivering results, preferably with momentum and pace, then you're probably not going to last very long as a leader. So it sounds sort of quite simple. It's not simple. It's simple to understand. It's hard to deliver. But future, engage, deliver has been something of a bit of a mantra for me. And it just helps you sort of reset sometimes in terms of, well, which bit isn't working. Is a good sort of check-in, if you like.
When it comes to navigating all of this, all these different environments, all these different teams, all of these different shifts culturally that we go through pre-COVID, during COVID, post-COVID, how do you stay true to your own personal values along the way, assuming those don't shift? You know, we all evolve as human beings, but most of us still have our core values that we've held for a long time. You know, we learn, we grow, et cetera, but most of those values remain pretty much the same.
No, exactly. This is probably one of the hardest things. I think, first and foremost, you try and work for companies that you feel, at least at some level, do align with your personal values and what you believe in. And I guess I would say I've been pretty fortunate throughout my career, and I've navigated towards those kind of companies that probably do best align with my values. And you can probably see the independent sector has attracted me overall more than, say, the network sector. Although I've learned tons working for the network agencies, of course. I think it's about knowing where your boundaries are. It's definitely about transparency of communication. Both ways. If you're being put under pressure to do something that you fundamentally do not believe in and believe is just wrong, I think the more senior you get, you have to speak up. You have to make some stands about this is not appropriate. And let me tell you why it's not appropriate. It doesn't always go down well, but you ultimately, you know, for your own sort of sanity, self-worth, there are always those moments, I think, in any career where you have to make a stand, say, this is just not right. And very rarely in my career have I had to say, I'm just not prepared to do that, but I'll tell you why. And I think the real trick is then to say, but what I am going to do is this. I think where people fall down sometimes is get very defensive about a situation, profess they're not prepared to do it, but they don't necessarily have an alternative or some way of navigating their way through this. And I think that is the trick. And again, that's not easy. And I think it comes with experience, because maybe you've kind of, yeah, I went through this a couple of times before. You've got to also have an alternative solution. And that generally takes the heat out of the situation, particularly if you can back it up with some sort of plan and ultimately go back to my framework of delivering those results. But it's really, really hard at times. And I think I have, not so much me personally, but I have had people that ultimately have to say, this environment just isn't right for me. And in the most extreme examples, I think you just have to take yourself out of that environment, but give yourself permission and back yourself that, okay, this environment isn't right for me. I am going to remove myself. And if that means doing something else, looking for another role, different agency, I mean, ultimately you owe it to yourself to do that.
Yeah, and I think by extension, they're better off anyway, because why would you want somebody involved with your organization that wasn't all in? Thinking in terms of your experience as a leader, what advice would you give somebody? You know, maybe you could draw on personal experience or the experience of others you've seen. Say you're a leader who ends up in a situation where there isn't a lot of cultural optimism. Let's say there's cultural pessimism, as example, and it's up to you as a leader to change that culture, to make it a far more optimistic culture. Number one, where would you have them start? What would be the first steps? And then where would they go from there? What would your advice to them be?
Great question. I have been in that situation before. First thing, I guess, is to understand, okay, how much power do I personally have to change this? What are my parameters? What are my limits? That's probably good to have at the back of your mind to know, what scope have I been given to change this culture? I mean, I would hope if you've come in as a new leader or you've been promoted into a leadership position in that kind of environment, somebody somewhere must have recognized that it's not sustainable and it needs to change. So you've been brought in to do a job. And that's the first thing, is making sure you have the backing to do this. That would be my first piece of advice. If you try diving in to change a culture without the backing of the absolute senior leadership, senior management, you may be successful, but it's going to be 5 times harder. That's the first thing. The second thing, I think, comes down to part personality, part approach, an approach of openness, empathy and understanding. So you have to go and talk to people. You have to understand, why is this pessimism exists? What has driven it? Is it the state of the business? Have you just lost a massive client? Have you been through some redundancies? Is it cost of living crisis? Is it personal? Are there some personalities that are toxic? I mean, it could be all of those things or something else entirely. And there could be pockets of it all over the agency. So first and foremost, there has to be almost a kind of reconciliation, understanding, talking to people. And you have to position yourself as, I'm just here to listen initially, you know, active listening. I'm not coming in to tell you what to do. I'm not coming in to, you know, a hatchet man or anything like that. I need to understand first and foremost what's going on. I think secondly, it's back to that engage the leadership team. I think you need to gather a team around you that want to change things. And it's kind of part inspiration. It's part the energy you bring to the problem. I'll come on to energy in a second, actually, because I'm a big fan of the four different types of energy that I think leaders need and why they're important. And then you've got to start fixing things bit by bit. And almost once you've fully understood the problem, you need some quick wins. You need some visible wins of, I've changed this, this is going to be different. And it could be, you know, it's like there was a classic a few years ago in London where they stopped the free toast and fruits in the mornings for the breakfast because they were going through a tough time. It had such a disproportionately terrible effect on morale. I mean, you know, the cost of the agency was relatively small, but it was so damaging to overall morale because you've taken away the free toast and fruit. But that's a lack of understanding of being on the ground, of people coming in the morning, chatting to people at the coffee bar. If you're not doing all of that, you don't get the rhythm of the place and you don't pick up the nuances. I mean, even here, we have hot and raw, cold running Coca-Cola crisps and chocolates. And Jesus, if they run out, all hell breaks loose. It's just some of those small things that make the difference. So it's senior backing, understanding, small wins, gather a team that want to change things. And ultimately, you may have to make some bigger changes. You may have to restructure. You may need to bring a few other people in quite often, or you need a bigger account wing and you focus all your energies on bringing in a new piece of business to that agency, because winning does change things, as we all know. And sometimes it's about there's been a terrible run on new business, morale's low because they just can't convert. And maybe you come in and go, right, we're going to win this client in the next quarter, and we're going to put all our energies into winning this client, absolute focus, and we're going to do it. And maybe that's the goal you focus on, and you focus minds, forget everything else, this is our priority. Things like that can make a difference as well. And if you do get that client in the door, you're up and running. You know, winning can be contagious, just like positive energy can be contagious. So that would be my advice to someone coming in to do that. There's quite a few things in there, I guess.
No, it's fantastic advice. I love that. Tell me about these four energies. I'm very curious about this.
Yes. Again, it's my favorite leadership coach, Steve Radcliffe. People talk about energy, and most people immediately think, oh, that just means physical energy, sort of running around doing things, which is important. But he breaks it down into these four areas. So first energy he talks about is intellectual energy. And in the sense of getting everybody in the agency to apply their intellect to solving problems. You can relate it back to your earlier challenge. If you were coming into an agency with low morale, low optimism, if you start asking people, well, what would you do? How would you fix this problem? What's the situation here? What have you done about it? Not in an aggressive way, but allow that intellectual energy to flourish and encourage it. Second energy that I've always embraced is emotional energy. And that's the energy you need to take the time to actually ask people, how are you doing? Even giving them some of your time. I mean, some leaders are so busy that they don't talk to anybody other than their direct reports. They're locked away with the leadership team. It's really, really important to take the time to check in on people, genuinely take an interest in their lives, which so many people just don't seem to have time for anymore. The physical energy is still there, but that is the energy you need to make sure people aren't paralyzed by panic or fear, so they're not taking the right actions, but they also have the energy to actually get stuff done. And then the final one is what he calls spirit energy, which I think is probably the most important, because it's about infusing the entire agency with the belief that they can be successful. It's back to that sense of cultural optimism that we were talking about right at the beginning. You've got to believe in it. You've got to believe that we can do this. We will be successful. We've got to believe in ourselves. We've got to back ourselves. And that needs repeating. That needs constantly reinforcing. And depending on people's personalities, some people need an arm around the shoulder. Some people need a bit of a kick. Others need a blend of those kind of things. But it's all about infusing belief. And that's the spirit energy that I think all leaders need to bring to be successful. And I've kind of carried that through most of my career as well. And I talk to people about the four energies, and we need a blend of all four. And as a leader, you need to exude those energies as much as you possibly can.
That's amazing. I love all four of those. When looking at not necessarily your career path, but let's say the larger agency picture, the challenges that everyone in most agencies, large, small, regardless of their structure, might be facing in the years to come. What sort of things do you see on the horizon? They could be positives, they could be negatives, they could be challenges, they could be opportunities. What sort of things should people be looking out for in any regard?
The obvious one, which I'm sure I've been talked to death at various conferences, etc., is I think it's getting your position on AI, understanding it, being able to harness it to enhance what you do, not be scared of it. I mean, there's all sorts of different aspects of that, of course. It's not just Gen AI to generate content, which is one aspect. I mean, interestingly enough, even at Green Park, we're now embedding prompt editors with some of our clients. And we are literally helping to evolve the way clients work with large language models, for example, in order to produce some of that amazing content I was talking about that meets consumer needs. Now, that is a significant shift. I mean, a few years ago, the very term prompt editor or prompt engineer completely didn't exist. That, I don't think, is something to be scared of. It's just an evolution of AI, which, let's face it, has been around since the 1950s. Obviously, in the last 2-3 years, it's exploded with the advent of the large language models and Gen AI, etc. That's clearly massive, and it is going to impact all agencies. I think the other development is potentially consolidation. Mergers and acquisitions seem to be back on the agenda. In the UK, I don't know if you've seen, WPP have literally just acquired a boutique startup called New Commercial Arts. I mean, I say boutique. It's founded by, you know, some very famous ad men who previously founded Adam and Eve, obviously hugely successful individuals. But my take on it is it's actually quite an optimistic move. They're going to be embedded within Ogilvy, possibly the other end of the spectrum in terms of a venerable, you know, fantastically famous agency brand. But this agency has been brought in to invigorate them, was the word that was used. So I think that is an interesting development. Are more successful independent boutique agencies going to be embedded within bigger network agencies? I mean, as far as we understand, the brand name NCA will continue for now. But the idea of taking a really creative independent, implanting it into a huge network agency to invigorate it, is quite an interesting proposition. But for the staff of Ogilvy, I think they're quite excited. Staff of NCA, obviously delighted, particularly those with shares. But it could be great for the whole industry. As you probably noticed, I'm into sort of positive energy and optimism. If this is seen as an optimistic turn and we're bringing, you know, some fantastic skill sets together to drive growth for clients, enhance people's careers, that's really exciting. And I think it's something else to talk about other than AI and all the doom and gloom that can surround AI. Other than that, I would say there will continue to be shakeout. I think smaller struggling agencies, particularly mid-sized agencies, will probably continue to struggle. I think the networks have their own challenges. There's still a lot of legacy overhead. The best ones are evolving, of course, but there are always massive challenges with huge networks dealing with huge global clients, efficiency, productivity, how are they using AI, et cetera, et cetera. So that's probably the three big ones, I would say. But, you know, crystal ball gazing is invariably very difficult, and I'll probably be completely wrong.
I'm always amazed at how accurate everyone is, to be honest. Well, Chris, this has been fascinating. I love your energy. You brought a lot to the conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time. If one wanted to find out more about you and about your agency, where would they go?
Greenpark.digital, greenpark.com. Come take a look. And it would be great to see you visit the site and give me a call. Love to tell you more.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show today. This is an absolute pleasure.
No, me too. Absolutely loved it. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you for listening to Agency Alchemy, a podcast from Advertising Week. If you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you're looking for more content like this, check out our roster of podcasts available now on the Advertising Week Podcast Network. You'll find it at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.